Many of the musicians I've already mentioned spent some part of their career in big bands. And thanks to my one-time BBC radio colleague, Humphrey Carpenter, in the late 1980s, I had the opportunity to experience working regularly in a large swing orchestra that specialised in the repertoire of the 1920s to 40s. Humphrey was the founder of Vile Bodies, which played twice weekly at the Ritz Hotel in London for the best part of a decade. He was also its bassist, but when he needed to devote himself full-time to writing his biography of Benjamin Britten, which eventually appeared in 1992, he asked me to take his place in the band for what ended up being a couple of years. There were Ellington and Basie transcriptions, plus pieces from the repertoire of Charlie Barnett, as well as Humphrey's own passion, British dance bands of the 1930s, such as those of Lou Stone and Bert Ambrose. Indeed, when I was researching several entries on British jazz and dance musicians for the Dictionary of National Biography in the early 2000s, Humphrey was writing his biography of Dennis Potter, who'd shared a love of this era. I more often than not found the books and magazine issues I was looking for piled up in Humphrey's regular corner in the upper reading room of the Bodleian Library in Oxford. Vile Bodies gave me an opportunity to play alongside some of the best British musicians in the older styles of big band music. Trumpeter Tommy McQuaiter, for example, had worked with Ambrose and the Squadronaires, and his section mate Duncan Campbell had played with Ted Heath's orchestra. The peerless Gordon Campbell was a regular guest on trombone, and in the reed section, alongside our fine regular saxophonist Jim Tomlinson, would be such first-rate players as Alan Barnes, Don Rendell and Olaf Fass. I still remember the dancers spontaneously moving forward and crowding round the bandstand one night as Don took an extended solo on Honeysuckle Rose, the audience eventually breaking into applause after his many choruses, much as must have happened in the swing era itself. On drums was Tony Ogard, a very astute jazz critic whose day job was editor of the Oxford Dictionary of Quotations. The lead trumpeter, Ian Smith, and I formed several subsequent bands together, and he's played in the Buck Clayton Legacy Band since its foundation. By coincidence, my very first oral history interview was with a veteran of the Duncan Campbell and Tommy McQuaiter generation. As an undergraduate, I wrote for the Oxford University magazine Isis, mainly for the arts page, and as well as covering concerts, not to mention promoting George Melly, I also reviewed art exhibitions. The Oxford Playhouse regularly had such shows in its upstairs bar, and in early 1973, I went along to preview a collection of paintings by Billy Scott Coomber. The idea was to combine the review and an interview feature with this Anglo-Irish painter who'd been a student of Sir William Orpen in the 1920s. A chance remark of his led me to realise I already knew his name, because he was credited as the vocalist and guitarist on the labels of some of my 78s of Jack Payne's band. Our conversation immediately moved away from painting, and for a fascinating hour he vividly brought the world of 1930s London swing orchestras to life. He'd also travelled abroad in that era with Jack Payne. I was playing L'Empire in Paris, he said, and after the show, I remember going to a little bar in Pigalle with a friend who said I had to hear the quintet of the Hot Club of France. They were a knockout. I was so impressed that when I came back, I helped to arrange Stefan Grappelli and Django Reinhardt's first visit to England. Billy told me that shortly after that it was being overwhelmed by the sheer technical skill and boundless technique of Segovia, whom he heard at the Queen's Hall in London, which made him give up the guitar. Although he sang with and directed Payne's band throughout World War II, he then became a BBC radio producer, which he combined with reviving his career as a painter. But I realised that February morning in Oxford, as he described playing at the BBC's Savoy Hill studio and the smartest London hotel ballrooms, that his generation had plenty of stories to tell, and few of them had been told.